Life Audio.
Today on Talk About That, John tries living in the moment and thinks I'm exactly 10% too negative. Meanwhile, I share a hypothesis about why conspiracy theories have exploded the past few years and tell the tale of the World War II pilot who had no legs and used it as an advantage. Plus a conversation about the dangers of isolation and why we need each other now more than ever. Today's episode is not sponsored by September in the South. Let's all have a pumpkin spice latte and pretend it's not 1,000 degrees outside. But first, a word from our actual sponsor.
Johnny, it's another episode of Talk About That, and I know the listeners are excited to hear where this goes.
I don't know. We never know where it's going to go.
I know you're excited to hear where this goes.
You know, we had a... I wish I had the clip from last episode, because we have a dear listener, our friend Larry, who built this lamp behind me, and many other things for the show. Fantastic guy, Larry Marshall. He listens every week, and I think he listens while he mows. Yeah. We have some people who
make
it there. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're kind of mindless listening. And
or just like, which is not a slam. Talking,
it's not a slam on us, but I don't think. Maybe it is. I like that I don't have to think while listening.
You guys make it where my brain's just completely disengaged.
But evidently, towards the end, we got into a conversation about how, like, we've talked about this before, about the news, you know, that it, you know, outrage is very monetizable. And so if they can keep us outraged, and we need just like good news, there's no just like, because it wouldn't sell,
right?
You know. And then he goes, then the show ends and the last ad is for some good news, you know. It was a good news podcast or a good news publication.
I don't even think
kind.
That was an algorithm thing. I think that was just luck of the draw,
I guess. So he just said, yeah.
Yeah.
So we blew it. So sorry to our sponsors, because we're like, there's no way, no one would listen. Please listen to the good news
podcast. Yeah.
So anyway, sorry, sponsors. We'll do better.
I don't know if we will.
We'll never
like
get
to promise things.
We'll never get stamps.com because we're like, stamps are a scam. I don't know. We'll just any potential sponsor will go out on a limb to disenfranchise them in some way. I think stamps are a scam, by the way.
Oh, let me tell you.
Probably not.
Dave.
I'm always afraid to ship things because I don't know anything about shipping.
Okay.
Do you ever feel intimidated by shipping? You ship a lot of books.
You've
gotten better at it, though.
There have been seasons I've shipped.
That whole thing about, like, Brian Regan has a bit about, like, the girth. They go, he calls, he's trying to ship some boxes. All right, well, now we just need to know the width and the length. We need the girth. He goes, I don't know. They're giving him some formula. He goes, I just started making up numbers. Look, I've got three boxes. They're all the same, and they're all 17 girth units. Just please come pick them up. I get intimidated, though, because I'm always afraid of paying too much.
Yeah.
Oh, or like, that's why I don't ship merch ahead. Like, if I have, 50 t-shirts I'm going to go try to sell at my shows, or 50 journals or whatever that I sell at my shows.
Yeah.
I'll just bring with me my suitcase and just bring 100 pounds of...
Yeah.
In my rolly bags, because I don't want to ship them back when I didn't sell them all. I feel like I have a weird fear of losing money on something worthless.
That happens to us with Reggie's merch.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have to ship ahead, and mm-hmm. then they'll usually ship it to his next place.
That's cool. But that costs you money.
Right. Well, and
it gets into your profit margin where you're like, oh, I spent $80 on shipping. I made this much, but then I spent this much on the product. So what did I really make? Then I pay taxes on that. I just feel like the more hands in that pie, I feel like adult. I just feel like, what am I doing?
Yeah. In our first two books were Thomas Nelson, and the last one's Onervin, and Thomas Nelson's warehouse used to be in Nashville.
Yeah.
And so we didn't pay shipping on the product. We would go pick it up in a truck. You'd go with me sometimes.
Yeah. That's what I do with shirts. I have a shirt guy here in Nashville, in Hendersonville, so I just go get them.
Well, when they got bought by HarperCollins,
right.
They got rid of that. So now we pay the shipping of the books, and then we pay to ship them somewhere, and then we pay to ship whatever didn't get paid to the next place.
It's a different world. It's a lot.
Suitcases is a great idea. You're doing good.
It is, but I think about it all the time because I've been selling merch at my shows for about 12 years of my 15-year career. And I put career in quotes. And then you start thinking, And I literally, somebody was asking me the other day about it, and a younger comic was like, so blah, 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 merch. And they were asking me questions about it. And I said, I'm the wrong person because I've been selling merch for 12 years and I still do not know if it's worth it. Like, I can show you that I made X amount of money on it in a good year. But when I think about the time and effort that I spent to make that, I go, should I have just been writing more jokes?
Yeah.
And getting more shows to make that same amount? Or are there shows that don't have me because they're like, this guy comes in and he's got this whole flea market he sets up. See, like, is there a show or two that I'm losing every year because it's like a corporate?
But
a big,
they wouldn't have known that.
Yeah,
how would they have known that? See,
no, I'm saying, like, if somebody's turned off, they go, I would have hired him for my Christmas party, but this guy's going to set up Branson in the lobby.
Because he saw you there.
Maybe.
Set up Branson.
Yeah.
I think that you always find, like, you have, because I'm a forecaster of negative things.
Yeah. No, I'm trying to be self-aware enough to know if I'm creating discomfort.
But you go about 10% too far.
Okay.
Like, I was with you on all the things, and you just come up with something just outlandish.
No, but I'm saying, like,
and then maybe.
No, but I'm trying to find a way to make that same money without dragging T-shirts all over the country.
Well, Johnny, I can't help you there.
Okay.
I'm not giving you any more money.
I do like, here's what I do like about it. Not even the money. We're not even talking about the money.
He doesn't even like the money.
Let's say the money was the same. I like that it gives me context to be in the back of the room or in the lobby when the show ends.
Right.
Because the shows where I've done it, they go, oh, we'd prefer you didn't sell merch. Like, that's some shows.
Now you're just standing there.
You're just standing there like you're at the end of a banquet line.
With your hand out, just a shake or something.
Yeah. It's so weird. But if you don't, and if you don't come out, you look like you're big time in everybody.
Right.
And I like connecting. So it gives you a context to be out there after the show. Even if they don't buy anything, they can be like, great show, we loved it. And then they kind of look down at the table and go, I'm not buying any of that crap. And then they walk away. But you had a moment with them.
I agree.
So I still like doing it. And I probably will keep doing it. But I don't know whether or not it's worth it. And I don't ship ahead. And I probably will never will.
Well,
unless it gets like gigantic and then you have to, right? You got to hire a guy just to be your guy.
Ugh.
Like, I think Nate, our friend Nate Bergetti, I think he's so big now that he's just like, I don't sell merch at all anymore. And he was making, I mean, there's an untold amount of money that he was probably making, but he had a guy that did it and they would go on, that would be a separate, probably a trailer other, of stuff.
Yeah.
And Nate just didn't even know. He would just get a check from it. And he was just like, it's not worth it to me anymore.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. And that's like, he's probably leaving money on the table, but again, he's probably just figured out that, yeah, but it's not worth the juice isn't worth the squeeze sometimes,
John.
Come on,
guys. Come on.
As the prophets foretold.
I wonder if I could apply to be that trailer guy for a much, much lower price.
That's what you do. You underbid.
Undersell the, or undercut the competition.
Yeah, you undercut.
I had someone interesting the other day. I'm curious how you feel about this.
I'm against it. I found the negative, just like you said I would.
I'm
already against it.
I just think that, I don't think you're negative. I just think that when it comes to yourself, you go 10% further into negativity than you have to. A lot of it, again, I'm down for. Yes, this could all go wrong. And then you're always like, but then what if I'm losing work because somebody drove by in a car and they, you know, had their window down? Like, you come up with some scenario that's like, just, you just go too far. You believe in yourself, Johnny.
Yeah.
Believe in yourself.
Okay.
But how do you deal with compliments? Because I was finishing up a manuscript to turn into a publisher, and the author I'm working with, and there's another writer on the project too, and me and the other writer are both Enneagram 6s.
Mm-hmm.
And like Enneagram 6s in general, we don't like compliments.
Okay.
Or we have a complex relationship with the compliments.
Mm-hmm.
And so like the author was pleased with our work.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like telling us all these great things. And we kind of got into this conversation about why it's really uncomfortable for the 2 6s to take the compliment. How do you feel about compliments? I'll tell you what I came up with on why I think it is.
I'm not suspicious of them. I think I deflect sometimes. Less than I used to, though. I think in the beginning, like when we were in the band days, we were doing that whole thing of like, well, all glory to God.
Humble
and
pride.
We were very afraid of someone thinking that we were prideful. So if someone complimented us, we were like quick to deflect, almost to the point where it was like neurotic looking probably to those people.
Yeah.
Like, what's this guy's deal? I'm just saying, like your song. Now I try not to, you know, like, I don't know, man. What's the old thing about don't let success go to your head, don't let failure go to your heart?
Come on.
Like,
now.
I think there's something to that.
Yeah, that's good.
When you're doing good, keep your head down. When you're doing bad, keep your head up. Mm-hmm. Like, I've tried to live by some of that. So, like, compliments and criticisms at the extreme are both kind of their own level of poisonous.
Yeah.
If you let them seep in, you start believing your own.
Your own bio.
In other words, if you heard one compliment and you think, I bet 1,000 people think this. This person verbalized it. But if, you know what I'm saying? This is a representative of my overall doing well.
Yeah.
And if you really do that, then that means that every person that leaves a negative comment on YouTube is a representative in your head of a 1,000 people or a 1,000,000 people, whatever it is. That if this guy had the guts to say this,
right?
How many people are thinking this and not saying it? So you kind of have to treat them with equal kid gloves.
Well, yeah, because that it is the same sword.
But what's your take?
Tony, that's a take I'd like to give after a quick word from a few of our sponsors.
Oh, teaser.
So I had this idea about compliments, and I don't think I'd verbalized it before. I was like, for me, especially in a project like this, and I've differentiated, I was like, if it's an award, mm-hmm. I'm great with awards.
Oh, okay.
And the reason is...
You get so few.
You give. That's true. But you
got him.
Hello. But you can't take it back.
Oh.
So right, that means okay. like
it's... Well, unless it's Reggie Bush with the Heisman.
Well, that's true.
Did you get a free house?
Now, if they were to vacate my writing wins...
If
yeah,
they
be...
were to like... Should you have taken those inappropriate gifts?
Right, right.
Did you go to a barbecue at...
If I took inappropriate gifts...
Coach Pearl's house.
They? Where's the results of that?
That's true.
But no. I realized like... On something like this, if the author, we haven't got to the publisher yet.
Uh-huh.
Like, if the author likes it, and I go, yeah, man, we did great, you know. So mm-hmm. I'm just happy the author likes it. But then, what if the editor comes back and is like, oh, guys, this is garbage. It's got to be redone. And that very well could happen.
Yeah.
Like, we want to go a whole new direction with this from where you guys went. And now the author may feel like, well, this, John thought it was good. Like, he's supposed to be a professional. So yeah. I'm kind of like, I don't know. Like, I always think it's good or I wouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to find the way to make it the best I can, but let's hold off, you know, like, and I'm glad you're pleased, but let's wait and see until we can't take it back.
But, so what you're saying is like the final, but you can't let the final say be in the marketplace either.
No, but once it's in print, then I know now it is what it is.
Well, and also there's more people in the downline that signed off on it. So it's almost like blame shifting, right? You can be like, well, look, a lot of people said it was good.
Listen, I loved having another writer for that very reason. I had to be honest with myself.
Yeah.
I would send her like my first draft and she'd run an edit. So when I turned it into the author,
uh-huh.
it was like, hey, me and her, she's already looked at this and says she likes it too. And it's like, now if you don't like it, you have to defy two of us.
It is. It's like a symbiotic relationship in a lot of ways. I've talked about that with agencies. Like, you have an agent, he takes 10% and he does good, and you have to have him. And if you want one that does a good job, which I have one, thank God, and he's a friend of mine, like I really consider him a friend. But it's also almost like that 10%, part of what you're buying is someone to shift blame to.
Yeah.
Because you're like, well, look, I'm doing all I can. Like, right. What is, you know, what can I do? I'm, you know, what's going on over there? Come on, man. And then he's doing the same thing with you. He's like, look, I can do all, I've done the most I can with this guy. Have you seen his jokes?
Right.
Like, I've taken him to heights unseen.
Right.
You know.
Everybody wins by acting like that the other is losing.
Yeah. It's a weird, and I'm not saying it's really that toxic.
No, your agent called
me. But there is a, okay.
Yeah, that's
he's really looking happened. To take you on? That's, he's undercutting.
No, he just wanted to talk about you.
Oh,
all the bad stuff.
Weird.
I was like, wow, this is, how did you get this number?
I think my agent does think that I'm neurotic. I think he thinks that I worry too much. But I think I worry the exact right amount.
Yeah.
Nobody that worries a lot ever thinks they worry too much.
I do. I think I do. But that's because of a lot of therapy.
But don't you all, but what I'm saying
beforehand,
is.
Beforehand, when I was just like you, Johnny, before
but I don't did, I, before you've grown as a person.
Before I'd done any work at all.
I was working on a bit about that, about my brother, because he's 6 minutes older. Like, we're twins, but he's 6 minutes older. Uh-huh. And I was working on a thing about that, because I have a bunch of jokes about him.
Yeah.
Like, silly things he said, and
right.
like he called us nocturnal twins to somebody he was dating. And so I have a joke about, yeah, we're raccoons. We root around in trash cans. And so I wanted to kind of give him a win in the bit, too. And part of what I thought about doing was, like, because he was 6 minutes older, sometimes I would say something and he would say to me, I remember when I felt that way when I was your age, too. You'll grow out of that.
Yeah, give it about 4 minutes.
Yeah, about 4 minutes, right. You're going to really see. But yeah, I know what you mean. Like you, but people who worry, here's the thing. All it takes is for one thing to go wrong that I have forecasted how you forecasted it.
Yes.
And then it feels like it props up more angst of like, I told you. And then now you get like five free situations that you can freak out, you know, overtly about. And they can't call you on it because you're like, what about this?
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's healthy. I'm saying it is what it is, John.
I have done it so many times. And I do. I'm one of those. I don't mind saying I told you so on this one.
Yeah.
I know that's a thing we're never supposed to say.
Yeah.
But when I told you so and now something bad happened.
Right.
Then I'm like, okay, the reason I'm saying I told you so is not because I want to be right. It's because I need you to listen to me so that something doesn't hurt us collectively together worse moving forward.
Yeah.
It's really more about that. Isn't it weird? It's always like a future.
Mm-hmm.
Which there are.
Well, it's hard to control the past, John. You know, worries about the past are pretty futile.
But do you worry about the past?
Yes.
Exactly.
I don't know why, though.
Yeah, I think I worry.
I think I worry. What do I worry about the past? I think I'm pretty good at letting the past go in my career. You know what I mean? Like, once I started doing this and I've settled in, like, this is what I want to do, and I think I can be good at it. So I don't, like, sit and dwell on, like, a lot of failures. Because I'm like, well, there's always a chance to get it right.
Right.
And I've had a lot of really cool breaks. Like, I've had a lot of people that have helped me along the way. And so that's helped that I don't feel like I was cheated out of this thing that I was owed. So a lot of people have that. They get bitter. I've just never felt like bitterness helps. But I do think about, like, you know, missed opportunities sometimes where you go like, oh, I didn't walk through that door and this could have been something or whatever. Yeah. But generally speaking, I think everything that's in my career that's happened, I'm pretty happy. And definitely everything in my life and my marriage and my, you know, my friends, I feel pretty like everything has happened like it was supposed to probably.
Yeah, I think I live there with you on that. I mean,
I don't think you do, John. I think you were trying to prove a point because you're like, you're like me, John. You all, Johnny, right? You dwell on the past and you're, aren't you haunted by the horrible specter of your past life decisions? And I'm like, not really. You're like, oh.
Me neither.
Me neither. We're both cool, right?
No, I really don't. I mean, again, therapy.
Yeah.
Or recovery. I mean, I think there is a regret, not a thing I have a lot of. Like, I regret not being outside when my dog fell in the pool.
Yeah.
Like, I have that.
Right. Well, that's like traumatic. Yeah.
Right.
That's, yeah.
100%. And I regret, but like on career opportunity, but career opportunities, things like that. Or I regret, you know, usually if it's a life and death thing or looking back, oh, I wish we would have gone to this doctor for my dad instead of this one earlier or whatever.
Oh, sure.
Like, you know, because you look at how things could go. Or I wish relationally I had made a better decision in how I handled something.
Yeah, or done something sooner. Because even when I do something good, I'm like, I could have done this 5 years ago and fixed this thing, this problem.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. But it's not I'm good living in the moment with that.
Yeah.
But I am trying to almost like, how can I learn from what that was and then project it now into my future? I immediately skip over the present if I'm not careful.
Yeah.
It's always like, okay, take that lesson now.
Right.
That lesson not learned from would be a waste.
Yeah.
Right? And so then I'm now too far trying to apply it and become too cautious or too, you know.
I do that for sure where even in the present, I'll be like, I'm scaling it. I'm going, well, if this worked here, what could that mean 5 years from now if I kept doing this?
Yeah.
And I've forgot to live in the thing.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm looking at what it could be or what problems I could foresee or what greatness I could foresee. Either way, you're not smelling the roses. You've ruined it.
Yeah.
You trampled it.
Rest and contemplation have been, I think, for me, a lot. They're ways, like I've written a lot about living the present. This idea, I've philosophized, I've internalized, I've looked at the prism of it all. Even that is not living in the present. Often I'm still trying to treat life like a math problem, but sitting, like I do the Lectio 365 app, which guys, I mean, we really highly recommend, Lectio 365. Lectio Divina is an ancient practice of praying scripture, but it's about 10 to 12 minutes a day. And it's just, listen to it more than read it, like listen to it. And you can do it in the morning and the night if you want. And then I'm also doing the daily office, at least the morning prayers usually, which are the Anglican Episcopal prayers. But they're again, things I never have done in my life that I find some comfort in right now. Mm-hmm. But I will stop and pray my own things in between, you know.
Yeah.
But somehow needing that time has caused me to feel like I'm smelling more of the roses.
Yeah.
Again, I have a high schooler now. She's a freshman. And, you know, like volleyball is crazy right now. And I find myself going, whew, I'll be glad when volleyball season's over. And I'm like, this is, I'm not sad about this in some, excuse me, some way of like already depressed about it. But like, hey, let's not hurry too fast, even though this is a hard schedule, because you only get four of these.
Yeah.
In high school, you know, like, and then it's over. Mm-hmm. So there's that sense of being, I think the reason we want to hurry forward usually is because of the difficulty or the tension in the present. Instead of like realizing the tension is doesn't have to rob us of the joy, that there's something there in the present that can be experienced as well.
Yeah. I'll tell you something that really got to me the other day. I was watching this. There's this creator, content creator on TikTok that I follow a ton. His name is Jason Pargan. I've referenced his work before because he's so fascinating. He knows a lot about a lot of subjects.
Yeah.
And he's this middle-aged guy like me, and he's on TikTok. And he's got this huge following now because his stuff is so thoughtful. I've sent you a few of his videos.
Is this the guy that does the political stuff?
Some political, but he has a lot of this just like about like life.
Yeah.
And some of them are even funny. And just weird. He used to write listicles and stuff for cracked.com. Like
okay.
He's a guy that just knows a lot about a lot of subjects and a lot of history.
Yeah.
So I've sent you some of his stuff, but he posted this thing today. He goes, I'm not a conspiracy theory guy, but I've been reading more about this one and I think there's something to it. And it was basically like, if you believe that corporations run the world now and they kind of are controlling social media and they're pushing us a certain way, pushing society a certain way because we're all on social media and addicted to it. He said, this whole movement of like quasi spiritualism on social media and therapy talk that says, get toxic people out of your life. You're better off alone than you are in a toxic relationship. If they can't handle me at my worst, they don't deserve that
right.
Church of that thought. He said the conspiracy is that those companies push that into the algorithm more because people in isolation buy more stuff.
Wow. Well, and they spend more time on social media.
They're better consumers. Yeah, they're on the apps more, and they buy more things from Amazon, and they buy more things from everywhere. They buy more things from Grubhub.
So this is researched.
Yeah, it's researched that this isolationist thing, which is scriptural, like you read about like isolation can lead to your folly because you don't have any counsel in your life. And there was another video that I saw where somebody was talking about how the rise of conspiracy theories and QAnon, the problem of it, and you see it happening in religious circles even, is the reason it exploded and just blossomed so much during the pandemic, and this was just a hypothesis, I don't know if any research has been done, but it really made sense to me, was, let's say I watch a video and it says that there's lizard people, okay? And I go, oh, this is weird, but how did this video find me? I'm not a lizard person video guy, whatever. You click on it, and you watch 10 minutes of it, and then you have a weekly lunch with your buddies and you go to lunch with them and you go, I watched this thing and the guy was making like crazy points, but he had one or two good points. Listen to this. You have a friend who's a PhD in your friend group that goes, Johnny, that's stupid and here's why.
Right.
What happened during the pandemic was all those lunches were canceled.
Yeah.
And so you had 2 years. Some of these people had 2 years to go down the rabbit hole while the algorithm fed them all of this stuff. And there was nobody to debate them or to smooth off the round edges even. Because, I mean, obviously some conspiracy stuff is true. Like, there's conspiracies in society. Like, it happens. But this idea that there's no pushback. And then by the time you do have that lunch with the friend, you've watched a year and a half of this stuff.
Now you
cut the friend out of your life. Because you go, he's gone. He's not one of us. He's probably a lizard person. Like, whatever you have to do. So it was interesting that that isolationist... And the point of his video was, Jason's video was, that even the things that we think are bad, like asking a friend to take you to the airport, asking a friend to help you move, asking whatever, asking for help if you're having like an emotional crisis, we're being trained to go on betterhelp.com or go to Uber to get a Lyft or to go to Uber Eats because I don't want to bother my friend, but I can't leave the house. I've got all these kids and I don't know what we're going to eat tonight. We need help, but I don't have anybody in my... we're being trained, not the BetterHelp's bad, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
We're being trained to isolate and get help on our own terms in a private way. Some things are private.
Yeah.
But we are creatures of community. It's how we're wired. And to now that we've extricated ourselves from that, we're seeing the damage that it's doing.
Interesting.
We're seeing suicide go up. We're seeing all this stuff and just self-harm anyway, not just self-harm in like, you know, suicide, but self-harm in like destructive behavior, like gambling addictions through the roof, because now gambling can be done online and no one is there to see you lose all the money at the poker table. Mm. You know, somebody was talking about that, how gambling's the number two addiction now after porn. So it's like it's been legalized everywhere and now it's private. And they go, nobody's watching. Lay down 800 more on Tulane. They're going to cover.
Yeah.
And then you get this weird rush from it, that risk. But then when it's over, nobody's there. The shame of it is almost gone.
Right.
Like it takes away that community element of like around the table with your buddies at the poker table. And I'm not saying it's just such a strange, it's an interesting thought. But I wonder, and his point too, by the way, at the end was, that friend who you asked to take you to the airport. Now, again, there's always the overkill of like the friend who does nothing but ask for favors and never right. gives favors. I don't mean that person. I mean, he goes, there are people in your life who are staying afloat because they know grandma is depending on me or my kid. You, if in your case, Sadie, I have to be healthy. Sadie's depending on me. And it keeps you around. It keeps you centered.
Yeah.
And so it's good to need each other. It's not great. Like this idea of like, I'll become totally self-reliant and that'll be good. It's not good.
No.
Like there are things that are good about being less interdependent and codependent. But this idea of I'll make myself just a monolith.
Yeah.
It's never good. Like destruction comes from that stuff. So it was really interesting. Like this is a guy who's not a believer, but his content was so, I was thinking this is a through line of scripture about isolationism and.
Well, yeah. Proverbs says he who isolates himself seeks his own desire and breaks out against all sound judgment, which is what you just said. When you're isolated, literally you've lost the ability. You'll break out against sound judgment. Someone will tell you about lizard people not being real.
Yeah. Or you just.
You'll defend it to the death.
And of course. Like these apps that just want to keep us on the app longer, that's the only goal is like, how can we keep this guy looking at this more? Yeah. They'll send you more and more of that. And then it's like you've built a new religion. By the time you get around somebody that has sound ideas for you, you've decided now they're the enemy because you've had these ideas propped up in your head. And that's just, it happens to everybody. We could all be guilty of it and fall into it.
It's interesting because I read that book about misreading scripture, through Western eyes, and was talking about Eastern cultures being based not upon what we consider to be right and wrong as much as they're based upon honor and shame. Mm-hmm. And shame is one of those words. Even myself, I've spoken on shame a lot and talked about it in the podcast even. They don't mean shame necessarily in the way that we're using it sort of in therapeutic language now or even religious language.
Yeah.
You know, if we use it more as a juxtaposition against like a godly sorrow versus a shame that says I'm trash and God could never love me.
Yeah.
Versus no, actually I'm valuable to God and I was dead in my trespasses. I've been made alive. And now because I'm that valuable to him. Mm-hmm. So it, you know, both lead to a place of acknowledging you need change. But one, I don't believe that kind of shame.
It's like self-defeating.
Right. That kind of shame I've never seen the 15 years of all the thousands of kids. If a kid felt like they were worthless, it rarely ever led them to do anything better that wasn't just very, very temporary. You could maybe get a little bit of behavioral modification, but never like a heart change towards, you know, true future transformation. But this kind of honor and shame is more like it's community-based and the family is intertwined. They were talking about even like prearranged marriages and how that's such an affront to the Western thought processes. But for them, there was a lot of course, I would want my mom and dad who have lived, you know, 30 years longer as a married couple than I have any understanding of marriage to help me make a wise decision that's going to be so big for the rest of my life. It doesn't mean I'm not casting so wide a net that said everybody in Eastern cultures likes that. I know there's rarely a movie or a show we just watch for the night where someone's not upset about that. Uh-huh. But that's also being made by Western
Right
company. So I don't know, But he was saying, having lived in Indonesia, the guy wrote the book, like, there was a lot of like, thank God I don't have to make this whole big decision on my own, that I have a community. And it wasn't just about the couple. It wasn't just the good match of the couple. It was the good match of the families.
Yeah.
And you think about how often the drama in Western culture over the families of two married people who did not have any interaction, any conversation about it, because it was all left to, this is their choice, right?
Right.
And I'm torn here. I'm not advocating, by the way, right, for pre-arranged marriages here.
You're right.
I'm just stating that for them, though, they would want to make a good decision.
Are you going to arrange Sadie's marriage?
Guys, I think you know where this is going. But I think...
When is the date?
The idea was 2072. But the idea was, like, that they would never want to bring shame on the family or the community, even. That's the...
Right, or dishonor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I would not do that. So I will do what's honorable for the good.
Right.
And it causes you, like you said, to sort of be lost in the bigger story.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I pray in the mornings right now is, God, I'd really like to be lost in the story today. Because, you know, and it was Tim Keller's book title. And I pray that God grant me the freedom of self-forgetfulness, because I feel better, and I think it's pleasing to God and more useful if I'm not just thinking all day about how this affects me. And it's such a programmed thing in me that I don't know sometimes. I mean, I'm trying to, through, again, contemplation and spending time, like, how can I truthfully pray as much for you or think as much about what's happening in your life than my own? And it sounds great.
Uh-huh.
And it sounds almost pseudo-humble, me saying it, but the truth is, I'm obsessed with self, and I believe that our culture kind of is. And it's okay that I have to make decisions for self, or that I have, you know, agency for myself. And certainly, I'm not advocating for... I don't think we could take now Western culture and suddenly go, now we're going to start arranging marriages, and now we're going to start doing... I mean, I don't think it works that way. I think we have to pull back to what's healthy and doable within ourselves, but to recognize what you're saying is true,
right,
that there is a harm that is done when I isolate to the complete exclusion of listening to community in any way, because I become now my own source, you know, or I have a very small group of people. Often I don't even actually know in person.
Right.
They're online. Right. Yeah. And I'm not going to say who it was, but there was everyone has seen it. It's been everywhere. It's a true poll that was taken about who people listen to the most, who they believe.
Uh-huh.
Right. 70%. And this was of, I believe, a particular party, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was of this person's voters.
Of this person's voters. They believe 70%. That's their highest level of.
Yeah. It was highest on the chart. Do you believe this person's telling the truth? And then 41% was their pastor or religious leader.
Right. And family was somewhere in between.
Family was somewhere in between. It was just above pastor, but not higher, much higher. Like 48 was your family.
And I'm not making a political statement. I think the statement I'm making is the people that you actually know.
Yeah.
Like, that you actually met.
Like, that's when you know it's in the culture war. Identity politics has become a problem. Is like, people that you know are normal, like, God-fearing, thoughtful people now register lower than your identity politic person
that you've
chosen.
Never met.
You've never met. You just go, yeah, but I know he's for me. No, you don't, man. That guy don't care about
and
you.
And it could be on either side of the aisle.
Yeah, it really can.
Yeah,
it
has zero
it really
to do.
Can. It's not about that. It's just about...
Or an influencer. It could be the same way.
Yeah.
Like, we talked about that. The desire for your favorite artist or your favorite author or whatever to be a certain kind of person, an ideal, to the point that you can do harmful things.
You'll manufacture it. You'll manufacture them as a person that you, that they're like me, I bet.
Exactly.
We've all done that. And then when you find out they're not, it's so disillusioning.
Right.
You know,
because
and
so
it's
much
like,
is riding on
and they
them.
Don't even know any of this is going on, by the way. They're just like, oh. And they're, and you're treating them like a commodity without meaning to as well. That's another part of like fame that's awful.
Some of them want to be treated like a commodity because there's money to be made on commodities. But I think it's just one of those things of the reason we don't do community, if you really want to get down to it, why do we not do it?
Yeah.
Is it's messy and we have to lose something.
Yeah.
Like,
and we don't ever want, you're right. Like that idea of being deferential to someone feels like you're stripping away my freedom. That's a big thing.
Yeah.
Like anything that has to do with like, well, I'll do everything short of being disenfranchised.
Right.
In any way.
Yeah.
Like, I'm all in, but you want me to what now? I don't know about that. Like, that feels like fascism to me.
Yeah. <You know? laughs> Yeah, giving up your own, even opinion. Well, not an opinion. Deference is a great word. Again, another proverb. A fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing their opinion. Mm-hmm. So, like, at some
point... Let me stop you there and say what I think. I know what you were trying to say, but...
But I think what you meant was... But I think it... There's one of those, you know, and there's a great prayer in one of the closing prayers of the morning daily office that says, you know, let me not so much seek to be consoled as to console, and not to be understood as to understand.
Yeah.
Because in the act of needing to be understood, it's rare that I will actually understand. And so I have to disengage intentionally.
Yeah.
And be willing to be like, oh, okay, there is another, forget just the word narrative, there's another truth, there's another stream of this truth happening. I don't have the whole stream.
Yeah.
Real truth comes, what does it, the scripture say, that a triple braided cord is not easily broken, right? And that's a community thing, but I think it's also a logical thing that the more I add counselors or knowledge or insight, the more people who are observing from different angles, then the better I can have a read on what this, the accuracy of what this actually is and not just my angle of it.
Yeah. I definitely think that thing of like you say, we're pro freedom on like, you should be able to choose your partner. So we're not saying, but we're also saying like our prejudiced view of Eastern culture. And we say, oh, this is, can you imagine? Like, the idea that we just let 2 18-year-olds just go out like, yeah, and with no, they're not even listening to people in their lives sometimes. They're just running off, and they didn't like even go try to get the blessing of the, you know, father of the bride or anything like that. Like, I know that's a very traditional thing, and it comes from like dowries and all this other stuff. But this idea of no family input, like you are kind of setting yourself up. I think it's why you're on your fifth marriage, honestly.
Well,
if you would only listen, we begged you.
I did have
I'm hoping this one with Laura is going to work out. It seems like it's getting pretty serious.
It's getting serious. Yeah, we're 23 years in. I did have a teenager say to me the other day, like, how will I know? You know, how can you
know? I think Whitney Houston said that.
And I said, well, here's what I know. When you get there, you should still be with the people that you trust as well.
Yeah.
And I actually told them, I was like, I remember... I had some serious relationships, and I remember Johnny and a few others. It wasn't like y'all said, hey, you shouldn't, you know, but there was like caution. Mm-hmm. Hey, this is something like, and I didn't like it. I'd fight against it and defend and all the things. But in the end, it planted enough of like, because I cared about your opinion. I know that you're on my side and you're not trying to deny me my choice, or you don't want me to live unhappily either. You actually want the opposite. So when you really start and don't like betray yourself, like we betray ourselves whenever we stop listening to people that care about us.
Yeah.
We're actually betraying what we know to be true in order to hold to something else we want to justify. And so if that person has bad judgment and you still love them, then that has a different story. But if that person generally walks in good judgment and there is a group who has accurate viewpoints, who are believing something, then it's at least worth listening to. Mm-hmm. And I know that that doesn't make a great episode of a great, you know, Nicholas Sparks movie, because it has to be that you and the other person, the only ones who knew.
Yeah.
And it's like, and of course the dads in the story usually are the idiots, right? Who don't get it, you know? And maybe we are at times.
This would be a talk to remember. That's what this podcast would be. If it was a Nicholas Sparks. It would be the podcast. It would be about a podcasting dad.
See, Mandy Moore listened. No, she didn't do everything her dad wanted.
A talk to remember.
But she did listen to her
dad. Did he write? Is he the one that wrote The Fault in Our Stars, too? Did he do that one? I can't remember who did that
No,
one.
I don't think he did.
More about the horses?
That's, no. What would be our podcast name for that one? I thought you were going somewhere. Sorry, I set you up and I know I just left
No,
you
it would
there.
Be a talk to remember. But I'm saying, like, I want to write a young adult book. I had an idea for a young adult book, and it was about two teenagers who fall in love while caring for dying flatulent horses. And it's called The Farts in Our Stalls. It's available at Penguin Publishing later this year.
That's beautiful.
You like that?
You don't, You don't tell a lot of fart jokes.
They have to be.
That was a well articulated.
It was a sophisticated. Sophisticated fart joke.
Guys,
I apologize.
That will be the byline of this podcast. It's like a sophisticated.
It's a sophisticated fart joke.
Right, the whole thing
for the whole family.
Yeah,
I don't know, John. Well, we've talked about not looking back or not looking back as a way to project to your future and then miss the present.
Oh.
But John, I think it's important sometimes to look back, because if we don't learn from our history, we're in danger of repeating it, just like 8th grade social studies. And so let's go back. This Week in History, John, it's a segment we like to call Talk About Then. Born today, John, Daryl F. Zanuck. He is an American Oscar-winning movie producer and executive, co-founder of 20th Century Pictures, 1933. 1946, he predicted the quick demise of television, stating, quote, "People will soon get tired of staring at a plywood box every night."
Mm.
I love quotes like that are kind of like foreboding of like this guy.
You know, I wrote for Mr. Haslam.
Yeah.
And his story, he loves to tell it, is he came out of college, he was out of the military, and he was newlywed.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this guy who owned a gas station who was like, "You can come work for me at this gas station in La Follette."
Right.
And then he had an interview in marketing at one of the new TV stations in Knoxville.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned down the TV job because he went home and told his wife, "This will never last.
Yeah.
TV won't make it."
Right.
And he makes fun of himself so much. Now, he went on to own the pilot corporation of...
He did okay.
He did okay. Yeah. It turned out...
He lived to take further risks.
Right. But it's so funny.
He knew fossil fuels would last.
Right.
Although, who knows? Let's see how... He's going to get out at the right time, probably. He's in his 90s, right?
Yeah.
So right as we're going to full-on EV, he'll be...
Well, Pilot was just now...
what?
Berkshire Hathaway.
Oh, well.
Now has a controlling interest in Pilot. So that's been over the last, like, 5 years. That's public knowledge. So
I don't know what Berkshire Hathaway is.
Warren Buffett.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he did, yeah.
The Long Island Hathaways? I don't know anything about. This week, John, 1975... Charles Manson follower Squeaky Frome attempted to shoot President John.
What year?
This was 1975.
That'd be Ford?
Gerald Ford. Do you know that within 2 weeks, there were 2 assassination attempts on him? Yeah. I knew Squeaky Frome and the gun misfired. She didn't know anything about the gun. She was just a hippie that followed Charles Manson.
Right, her name was Squeaky.
Well, yeah. Okay. They heard her coming. I don't know. So she was about an arm's length from the president when this all went down. So I don't know how she got that clip.
Where were the agents?
This was on the grounds of the California State Capitol building. She tried to shoot him with a pistol. The gun failed to fire. No one was injured. Frome apparently didn't know how to operate the gun. She was quickly apprehended at the scene. She said she wanted to make a statement to people who refused to halt environmental pollution. And how better, John?
Right, than to kill the president.
Yeah.
That will.
And during the trial, she threw an apple at the prosecuting attorney, knocking off his glasses. That's a little factoid. She spent 34 years in prison, was released in 2009. Ford gave a videotaped testimony at the trial, making him the first U.S. president to testify at a criminal trial.
Huh.
There's another little trivia for you. 2 weeks later, Sarah Jane Moore would attempt to assassinate Ford as well. Wow. And she got the shot off, but somebody, Secret Service deflected her hand.
Wow.
Like grabbed her arm, and so the shot went awry, or who knows what could have happened. That would have altered history for sure.
Wow.
The first legal forward pass in football was this week, 1906, John. St. Louis University's Bradbury Robinson throws one against Carroll College. Robinson's first attempt at a forward pass was incomplete and resulted in a turnover according to 1906 rules. I don't know why the rules would have been different. But he did complete a 20-yard touchdown pass to Jack Schneider later in the game. Illegal and experimental forward passes had been attempted as early as 1876, but this was the first legal forward pass in American football after the change in rules. It still remained a seldom-used play until the famous first Army-Notre Dame game, where Charlie Gus Dore and receiver Newt Rockne were able to use this forward pass to counteract Army's size advantage. Till that time, receivers would come to a stop and wait for the ball, but he passed to Rockne while he was in full stride. And so that was kind of when you had the first, like, caught him running, and he's able to take it in yards after the catch. Yak, we call that in the industry. I know a lot about athletics.
Yeah.
American football would never be the same again as the forward pass went from a seldom-used play to a major strategy of the game. And, You know, Tennessee? Looks like we could be okay this year. What do you think, John? What's your guess? How many wins?
10 wins.
10 wins.
That we had 11 last year, so I'm bringing it down.
We're beating Georgia or Bama, or we're losing to both of them?
Or
is that your three losses? One, two of your three losses?
Those are the two losses.
You only have us losing to Georgia and Bama.
Okay, who else is going to beat us?
Or who are we playing in the West, LSU or Auburn?
A&M.
We can beat them.
A&M's good, but...
They are, but we're better. We've got
look, Florida at the Swamp in 2 weeks, Johnny. This is what it's all about.
This is when you take advantage
of
it. Well,
but here's the thing. Don't overlook
them. They're going to be mad,
I know. The Swamp is worth 14 points. You know what I'm saying?
That's I think...
Isn't that true of life?
President Lincoln said that. here's one, John, as we wind down the show. The legless flying ace died September 5th, 1980... Wait. No. That's not right. That's wrong. Died September 1982, born 1910. British flying ace Douglas Bader. Listen to this guy's story. His loss of his legs gave him an advantage in combat over other pilots. In 1931, Bader lost both of his legs in an RAF plane crash while performing aerobatics. So he was in like a Blue Angels type. Whatever. Loses both of his legs. After recovering from the accident, he retook flight training and requested reactivation as a pilot, but was retired against his will on medical grounds, which would make sense. But when World War II broke out, he reapplied and was eventually accepted. His lack of legs proved a benefit to combat flying. Do you know why, John?
I don't.
When fighter pilots make hard turns, the high G-forces will cause them to black out sometimes as the flow of blood from their brain drains to their legs. Due to his lack of legs, Bader was able to withstand the higher G-forces than other pilots.
Come on.
So it gave him, it was like a body hack.
Oh, my
He was
gosh.
Accidentally a superhero.
Wow.
So he could do crazy things in the air and avert.
Hey, this is when we write our screenplay. Right
it's
now,
pretty good.
A strike. We write the screenplay.
It's pretty good. In 1941, his plane was down, and he spent the rest of the war in POW camps. He is credited with 22 aerial victories, 4 shared victories, 6 probables, 1 shared probable, and 11 enemy aircraft damaged. This guy's got the stats.
Wow.
And it was because he had the extreme advantage of having no legs in the air. Won't God take something that's a disadvantage and make it?
I mean,
won't he?
He does.
Okay. Let's go somewhere else here. Jesse James, born this week, 1847, died 1888. Do you know how Jesse James died? First of all, he fought with Confederate guerrillas during the Civil War. I didn't know that.
A lot of the Western outlaws were Confederate.
That's not great. That's not a great.
No.
He was already probably problematic by our modern standard. Any Old West gunslingers, not like, you wouldn't want to hang out with him.
I don't know. Maybe it was like
But Jesse James, especially problematic, he was shot by a member of his own gang to collect the reward of $10,000. So somebody just basically shot him in the back to collect a reward.
Took down the most notorious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a sad end.
His brother's name?
Frank?
Yep.
Frank James.
Two first names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Frank and Jesse James.
I guess Jesse James is two first names, too.
Well, the likelihood of having two first names,
if your last name is James, is pretty high. First name, Smith.
No, James.
The name's Smith James.
Jim James. Last two, John. Born this week, 1939, George Lazenby. Do you know who George Lazenby is?
Oh, yeah. No.
Really? He's probably the least regarded James Bond. He did one film. It was called In Her Majesty's Secret Service, 1969.
So
you had Connery. It's after Connery, before Roger Moore, before...
Okay, I didn't know there was somebody between Connery and Moore.
Maybe it was before Connery. It was 1969, so I think you had a few couple of Connery films before him. And then maybe he wanted... I can't remember why. I'm not a Bond guy.
Yeah.
So I can't remember what the reason was that they insert Lazenby. He was an Australian guy. And that movie is considered the worst Bond film. Like, he's considered the one where it's like, this guy.
Ugh.
So.
He's like the Val Kilmer Batman.
Yeah, right? A little bit.
I love Val Kilmer. But
yeah, but come on, man.
Yeah.
You had locked in your mind on Keaton. Of course, then they just went on to just anybody that wanted to be Batman. I'm Batman in the next one, I think. Everybody gets to be Batman at some point at this point. Finally, died September 1997, Mother Teresa of Calcutta.
Hmm.
And
oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. Yugoslavian-born Nobel Peace Prize-winning missionary. She's called the Living Saint. She dedicated her life to the poor and sick of India. And I think about Mother Teresa a lot, actually, especially for a Protestant. I think about her probably a lot.
You quote her a lot.
Yeah, she had some amazing... And I'm sure she was a problematic... Everybody's flawed. Sure. But I just think that some of the things that she said and did in her perspective are fascinating to me. One of my favorite quotes of her is... They were doing an article about her. We may have talked about it on the podcast before, but they were doing an article about her for some Christian magazine or some Catholic magazine. And she said, they said, you're bringing Jesus to Calcutta. And she said, no, I go there to meet my Lord.
Yeah.
And I've always thought about that, about the idea that like she saw Jesus in the face of those people that she was serving.
Yeah.
And that's what Matthew 25 is about. So she really like it jumped off the page to her and she really felt that way. And that was her perspective. So anyway.
No, it's good. I mean, there's so much. Again, I'm exploring a lot of different. Again, they're mostly Protestant, but I read books by different Catholic theologians and others too. I mean, I just think that there is a wider world that our evangelical world sometimes is not all bad, but sometimes I think we weren't highly exposed to a global church perspective. So, yeah, that's great. And appreciate her work and hope lots of people will follow her footsteps because that's what we do to follow Jesus, right?
Right.
Yeah. That's great. Hey, Johnny, did you know that we had a couple new reviews?
Oh, no. What's going on? People are chiming in?
Yeah.
I enjoy that so much. You know, you can go to talkaboutthatpodcast.com.
Oh, it's great.
You can send us a note. There's a little comment bubble. You can support the show. Upper right, there's a link there. You can watch old episodes. We have 270 plus episodes. And if you go to the Apple Podcast, whatever your platform of your choice, you can leave a review, and we'll probably read it on the air, unless it's super hateful.
Yeah. Even then, though, we might enjoy that.
That's true.
Because we had the microphones.
Yeah.
Right?
We can embellish.
We can, like, isolate ourselves.
We can psychoanalyze. What's this guy's deal that made him write this?
Yeah,
we can guess on it. Yeah.
Right. And not ever
can't be our problem. No.
Everything we talk about. This one is entitled So Relatable.
Oh.
Double exclamation point.
Okay.
5 stars.
That's nice.
I've been binging this podcast for the last 2 weeks. I love the banter between these guys. They're positively hysterical, but also very thought provoking and obviously deep thinkers and very intelligent. So, so good. That's from Seek to Be Fit. Via Apple Podcasts.
This is you, right? You wrote this.
I don't know. It's not, but I feel like this person gets it. You know what I'm saying?
They seem like they have a handle on...
Like...
You know?
Yeah. Like, and of all the people that we've heard from...
Right.
I mean, this was another one that I think really...
Some people see the world as it is.
Right.
You know, and they're like, I think I understand. And it's important that those people leave us a review.
Isn't it?
If you don't like us, you're probably not really listening.
No, you haven't got this far anyway. At this point, all of you hearing right now, especially if the music's already started, you know, as soon as Laura will be like,
I want to say something at the end that then goes into an ad that contradicts it. So, what can we? I'm trying to think what we could do. What would it be? I don't know what it might be.
I don't know.
You know what I hate? The Home Depot. I'm just kidding. <It'll> be...
We do get Home Depot ads.
I used to work for Home Depot, so I could never speak truly ill of them. Although, I will say this. There was a time when I probably would have taken it out at Home Depot, and you get older, you realize, man, I was a bad employee at Home Depot.
Yeah.
I was lucky to hang on to that job for the 3 years I was there.
Yeah.
Like, that was... They were... You talk about walking saints. There was a couple of... Mother Teresa assistant managers that kept me alive there. They were like, you know what? We could fire him easily for cause, but he's making $6 an hour. What's the point? They kept me around. I was a newlywed. Yeah. I mean, come on, man.
I bet you're better than you think.
It was rough.
That's okay.
Yeah. I think I did the best with the tools that I had at the time. I have better tools now. And part of those tools is realizing, man, I was kind of a punk 22-year-old or whatever.
I thought you were going to say that part of those tools came from Home Depot because they did sell tools.
I stole the tools. And now a word from Home Depot. Anyway, read the review. Oh, you read the review. So if you want to leave another review for us.
Guys, it's so helpful.
It helps people find the show. That's a big thing. The almighty algorithm, blah, blah, blah. We all know about that. So they like you know, not just like if you leave a 5-star and you just click and you don't leave words, that's one thing. But another level is to leave like actual why you like the show.
Yeah. Means a lot to us.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you'd said a minute ago, something's better than you think. You know what else is better than you think?
What's that?
JohnnyW.com.
It has to be better than you think because our the standard is
so low.
Yeah.
It's JONNIE.
Uh-huh.
I understand it's an unorthodox.
I'm sorry about that spelling. That's on me.
He didn't have to do it.
When you start your career, you just go, oh, this will whatever. And you don't realize people are going to be trying to find you.
Yeah.
And they're going to throw an H in there every time because it's the traditional spelling.
You
and
would be so huge right now if.
Yeah. That's the reason.
Yeah.
See, another blame shifting.
That's it.
If I throw these little things like, I could have been huge if I just put an H. And instead, it's my terrible, terrible comedy.
Mine is because I don't have hair. I lost a lot with the hair.
I don't think so.
I do. I think I'd be
you got a good head, though.
I'd be a senator. You don't see a lot of bald senators.
No, you don't.
I mean, until they're like in their 80s, but they had a big head of hair when they got elected.
Even like Bernie Sanders is like a cartoon character.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He's kind of an extremist. People kind of see him a certain way.
And that's how they see me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But Bernie Sanders has been doing it a long time. I mean,
he had hair when he started. He pulled it out because of the electorate.
Oh.
Probably.
I don't know.
Because of you people. There'll be a Bernie Sanders campaign after this now. I'm Bernie Sanders. That's my Bernie Sanders impression.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Hey, guys, thanks for the time that you spent with us. We can't wait to see what this ad is next. It's going to be great, but we'll see you next week on
Talk About That.
To learn more about God and His will for your life, one verse at a time, I'm Quenice Petway, co-host of the Your Daily Bible Verse podcast. I'm inviting you to tune in and subscribe at lifeaudio.com.